Our agenda is here. Today on the agenda is discussing where we stand on the JSON LD API and futures, talking about test suite design a bit more and implementation report planning. Is there anything else that we should add or put on the agenda for today?
Yes, there's the issue that we did not resolve last week that we only devoted about 10 minutes to. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. It had something to do with terms and term redefinition.
Yeah, I'll get a link to that. Although it seemed like we were kind of, there was some level of consensus there. It seemed like there was consensus. Yeah, let's add that right after we deal with the last call issues. Okay, anything else? Nicholas, would you mind scribing today?
No, it's fine.
Thank you. Okay.
You probably need to add Paul to the scribe list, I suppose, Mono.
I will, next time around. Paul, would you mind scribing at some of these telephones?
I can try.
Okay, thanks. It's okay. We have everything in audio, so we can always go back and find things if you
right.
Need something scribing. But, okay, let's go ahead and get started. First topic is the JSON LD API and futures. This came out of a discussion that we had on Node.js callback style, like continuation callback style versus the future callback style. So after a lot of back and forth with the WG and W3C staff members and discussing whether or not we could even reference a specification outside of the W3C, it became fairly clear that the browser vendors do intend to use the future style calling mechanism for most future web APIs, browser APIs specifically. So that basically means that if we do the Node.js callback style, we will be going in a different direction than the browser vendors, and that's usually not a good thing to do if you want to have your API integrated into the browser. I don't know if browser integration is really a primary goal of this group, but it would be nice, and it would be good to kind of try and align with where the browsers are going. So with that said, we had a quick offline discussion about this last week. Dave Longley volunteered to go and start trying to do an implementation of a JSON LD API that's based on futures. And Marcus went ahead and modified the specification to see what the JSON LD API specification would look like with futures in it. So at this point, if we could kind of hear from both Dave Longley on the implementation, how that's going, and Marcus on the spec and how he feels about the spec text, we could kind of use that as a basis for the rest of the discussion. Marcus, would you mind going first, talking about spec changes?
Sure.
Thanks.
So here's the link to the updated spec. There are actually not that many changes that had to be made. Basically, I just dropped the callback parameter in all the meta signatures. I'm getting some noise here. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but I do hear a little bit of feedback.
Okay. So basically, I just had to drop the callback parameter, and instead, every method now returns a future. And the algorithms itself didn't change at all. All that changed was kind of how the methods are linked to the various algorithms. And so previously, either the callback was called and an error was passed, or the result was passed. Now, when you invoke a method, the first thing you do there is you create a new future and return it. and then you more or less execute exactly the same steps as you did before. And as soon as you have either an error or the final result, you resolve the future, and the caller can then get that value for that error. So it was a bit, I tried intentionally to not include too many details about futures in those updates because, well, there have been, just in the last week, I think, almost 200 emails discussing various details about futures. So I tried to decouple the two specs as much as possible. And I think that's also the way to go, because in the end, it doesn't really matter how the future is implemented or not. And describing it in a kind of abstract way, it's also clear enough, I would say.
I agree. Although they did what WG and Venkatesran definitely wanted us to say something about the fact that things are called asynchronously, but you've got that in the spec right now.
Yeah,
I don't know if it would be useful for us to put a little description on the general design of the API based around futures in this version of the JSON-LD spec, because it is kind of new. We might want to point out that kind of in general why the API was designed in this way.
An example might help illustrate this too.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah. One
danger with using an example is that the futures API might actually change. They seem to be having quite a bit of a discussion about it right now.
The nice thing about examples is that they are non-normative, so they're just illustrative. So I don't think we would have to care about that if something changes. That's true,
and I think that the trade-off is a good one to make. So we're putting an example in just to show what the intent is and give the developer an idea of what the code looks like without creating any kind of normative reference. And if it does change, we can change it in the live version of the JSON-LD spec, and hopefully, you know, we can do a proposed edit and rec at some point in the future to fix it. It is a danger, though, and it is one that we should be aware of. Okay, Marcus, anything else on the spec work around the JSON-LD API? I mean, it looks like it cleaned some stuff up as well, meaning we didn't have to do the overloading anymore.
Yeah, that's true. But other than that, it more or less stayed the same. I removed one other callback we had that was that callback which was called when a remote contact has been successfully retrieved or an error corp there. They replaced that with a future as well. So we don't have to do that method overloading anymore, and the API surface got a bit smaller in a sense because some things have been removed. But overall, there aren't really any fundamental changes or anything. It's kind of a trivial change.
I didn't look just yet, but I was wondering, what did you have the load context callback when the future is executed? What does it resolve to? The return value used to include the URL and the data for the URL, so that you could figure out what the final URL was for the context.
Exactly. Now there is a remote context dictionary which includes the URL and the context, and that's the return value.
Okay.
So you get either you get back a string, which is an error code, or that dictionary, which is the URL plus the context.
Yeah. Dave, do you have any concerns about that? That seems like to me. with the restriction that Futures has that you had.
That was a comment I was going to make when talking about how the implementation was going, which I guess I can just go into now. So when we were talking about adopting Futures, it was explained that Futures were based on the previous spec work called Promises/A+. I believe that that should be a link to that spec. Sort of an informal spec. And so I went off looking for something that had implemented Futures in JavaScript. I couldn't find anything that had implemented Futures in JavaScript, but I found something that had implemented Promises/A+. And the API is very similar to what Futures is doing, but not exactly what it's doing. So, but I went ahead and did the implementation with Promises A+. And everything went fairly well. It was fairly easy to use. The complaints or annoyances, I would say, would be, first of all, that Futures apparently, when you resolve or when you resolve a future, is the same thing as saying you call the callback in the older style because you completed your operation. You're only allowed to pass one value. And previously, for instance, our load context, we would just pass the URL and the data. Now you have to wrap that up as an object. And that can be a little bit more frustrating if you're trying to use Futures internally in your library or if you're trying to use it for different APIs that Node has used or that just people are used to using. Whoever just muted themselves, that was great. Or when the feedback just stopped. But in any case, now, when I implemented with Promises A+, I'm still getting a lot of that feedback. When I implemented with Promises, they have some functions that allow you to convert some of the Node.js style callbacks into Promises, and that only will take you as far as it will only work for those calls that don't return more than one value. If they return multiple values, you get back an array. And if you get back an array, it essentially takes all of your arguments and puts them in an array. If you get back an array and your API could previously give you an array or other arguments, it becomes indeterminate whether or not you it's really difficult with all the feedback. It becomes indeterminate whether or not you received your array or you received multiple arguments. Especially my processor was using multiple arguments and callbacks internally to pass both JSON-LD and other values. And sometimes you get with JSON-LD, sometimes you get an array or sometimes you get objects. But in any case, I found that to be kind of frustrating with Futures. And the only other thing I kind of found frustrating to be with Futures is that it seemed like it was sort of forcing an object-oriented approach to implementations. But I guess for the browser, and because all of these browser APIs are more or less implemented in C++, it's not too big of a deal. But I found that it made it more difficult to write simpler custom JavaScript code versus what I'd been used to. However, I don't know if that's just a learning curve problem or not. In any case, I did complete an implementation that uses Promises/A+. I'm going to have to go back now and figure out how I can wrap that API with the changes that have been made to Futures so that it is compliant with what's in the Futures spec. However, I'm also a little bit concerned because it seems like the Futures spec might also be changing, and it might change to become closer to Promises API. I'm not sure. Based on the discussions I've been seeing going across the mailing list.
Dave, did you say it's changing to be closer to the Promises API, as in
it might
align
be
with the test suite, the Promises A+ test suite?
Well, from what I could see on the mailing list, they were discussing things like the Futures API has some different or additional features like with the futures resolver, you can accept, resolve, or reject things, and with the promises API, you can only resolve or reject, and there was no significant difference between resolving and accepting. And they might drop accept. I don't know if they're going to, but there's a discussion about it. If they dropped, it would make the wrapper that I have to write a little bit easier. It's unclear where what changes are going to be made to the features API, because as far as I know, no one's really used it yet. It sort of feels like we're the first case of people actually coming along and using it, other than just writing examples.
Well, we are. Chad,
right.
So he has one other spec that uses the futures API, but that's it. So we are the canary in the mine, which is kind of annoying.
I think the thing you just said about that the current promises /A+ doesn't specify reject and accept and that kind of stuff, that's intentional, because it really just deals with what happens after that has been done. So it's, on the mailing list, they call this tenable instead of promise or future. And if you read the second paragraph in the link you pasted before, it actually says that this proposal doesn't deal with how to create, fulfill, or reject promises. So I think we definitely should have a look at the DOM spec for the futures and not really promises A.
So is there a general feeling from Marcus or Dave or anyone else on whether or not this is the right direction? I mean, I think it's clear that we could put it in the spec and get it out there, and any changes that are made to the futures API, we could fix those things fairly easily in the implementations. But does anyone have any feelings like we should just not do this and we should go with the asynchronous style, Node.js asynchronous, or sorry, continuation style callback approach?
From what I can tell, I would expect that this is, if I had to guess right now, what I would expect to have happen is more people are going to come along and look at the futures API. I don't think enough people have looked at it right now. More people with more experience are going to come in and look at it, and they're going to want it to be changed in some way. But I do think that it will probably end up being the way that people write APIs for web browsers. And so what will probably end up happening is we'll implement something for the futures API, and then it will end up having to change anyway. But it's probably the direction that people are going to go. I don't think that they're going to give up and just go with the node style callback, even though it's simpler. I think people are going to push for something more complex that gives people a framework to work with. But I don't think that what we're looking at right now is going to be exactly how it will be, how it will end up in the future. I just don't think enough people have looked at it. Particularly, I don't think enough people have looked at it that have a lot of experience with this, and the place where people have the most experience with this is from the Node.js community.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Well, from what I can see, it certainly looks like a very elegant way of doing things. I am nervous about depending upon something that is clearly in such an early stage, but it seems that doing something like this is inevitable. It appears to me that the spec text, it says so little about futures other than it returns a future and then you call the complete resolution operation. It seems to me we're fairly independent of other changes they might make in the future unless it's radically changed. Now, that obviously actual implementations and presumably the test harness might be impacted by that, but the spec doesn't seem like it's likely to have much of an impact unless they go in a completely different direction.
Paul, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I still have some concerns regarding just changing courses kind of late in the game. I know we're this is in response to some of the comments that we've gotten for last call, but having all these changes right at the very end with a spec that's not quite fully fleshed out and still kind of work in progress as well, that bothers me a little bit, just from a completeness point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. I think the thing that all of us are concerned about is whether or not we're aligning with the web platform. And I think based on experiences that we've had with RDFA and some of those other specs, if we choose to take a path that goes kind of away from the web platform meaning the browser vendors, what the browser vendors want to have in the browser, that ends up backfiring, or it has backfired on us in the past. So I think we're being very sensitive to it this time around because we have the choice, we have the chance to align with what the browser vendors want, and if we do that, the likelihood that this stuff gets pulled into the browser is higher. The other point to make on this is that this API, the futures-based API, is really intended for browsers. Other people can end up implementing this stuff in other ways for other languages. So, for example, I think Dave Longley had said that he still plans to have a continuation style API that's provided in the JSON-LD library we're working on. Python libraries will probably do a synchronous style API. So I think specifically this API that we're working on is intended for JavaScript environments that are really in the browser, and other people can do other things if they want to.
I do have one. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, it would be nice if there was some way of decoupling this just so we can get a little bit further along on the specs while still maintaining like the APIs almost as a separate entity or whatever, so that we're not binding the algorithms and the syntax to the API. I know that's also kind of a radical thought as well, but...
Well, no, that's what we do right now. They're completely not bound to one another. That's the design of the spec, so the syntax is not bound to the API at all, and the API...
Well, they are
API.
Bound to the degree that... Well, so if they are bound, and I think there were some discussions about this with the RDF working group. They're in the same spec, so if we fail to get past LC because of instability in the API, that means that the algorithms also fail to get past LC. So, no, I don't think we want to create necessarily a third spec, but that would be a way to allow the algorithms to proceed if we weren't mature enough with the API.
I guess what I meant is they're not technically bound to one another. They are in the same spec. They're procedurally bound, but
yes.
They're not technically bound. Yeah, I mean, we could actually... So if we decide to split the API out of this spec, we're going to go through another last call. If we decide to move the futures to a futures-based API, we're going to go through another last call. So there's nothing that we're doing at this stage that can get us kind of out of that... out of that problem, unless we decide to not change the spec. And I think I'm hearing consensus that none of us want to take the no change route.
Well, I mean, there is another problem with that note approach, because we also got feedback that even that callback style platform style. So it's not how things are done in the browser. So we would have to change that method signature anyway.
Yeah, of the five or six different ways that it's done in the browser, it's yet another way that may or may not be better than those other ways. But I also wanted to bring up the point that I don't know if we need to have two working implementations of this API in order for it to get through the system, because we at this stage I don't know that anyone else is going to do another implementation of the API, because futures are just not of any use anywhere but in JavaScript. I guess two different people could write two different JavaScript implementations of futures.
Yeah, we need that to happen if we're going to, because the API is normative, right? And if it's normative, it needs two independent implementations. I mean, the two independent implementations might be fairly easy to do, because all someone for the API, specifically for the API, two independent implementations mean that someone could take the JSON-LDGS library that Dave Longley has written and just create the Futures API on top of it.
Well, one thing I was kind of hoping for was that the Promises library I was using would look just like Futures, and then I could just write my own, and then we would have two independent implementations. But I don't think that that's going to be the case.
Mm-hmm. Aren't we the ones who define the CR exit criteria?
Yes, but we also have to get the RDF working group to agree to it, and it might be it's going to be a touchy subject if we only have one implementation of this.
Yeah, but normally it's not that every implementation has to implement every feature. And
that's true.
I mean, we have quite a number of implementations. They just have a different API. But the algorithms, I think, in the end, it's the algorithms is what counts and not really the method signature.
I think the thing is, not every implementation has to implement each feature, but each feature must be implemented by at least two implementations.
That's correct.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
That's correct.
Now, that said, it seems to me that what we say about futures is light enough that wrapping it or providing something. For instance, you could implement futures without requiring that they actually be asynchronous, because the API doesn't really require that.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's the point that Dave Lane was trying to make in that email yesterday, is that there's nothing that says that it's required that they be implemented asynchronously.
Well, implicitly, because you have to return the value before you do the calculations, so you can't do
the lambda.
Yeah.
And then the lambda would just wrap the body of the function.
Right.
I presume Python could do something almost the same.
Yeah, it's a nitpicky technical point, but I think it's correct. Anyway, let's jump back up the stack. Do we have a consensus on implementing futures? I know Paul has the reservations, and I think many other people in the group have the same kind of reservations about this. But is there another proposal on the table that would be better? That would be a better direction?
Well, the problem is that we have to do a second last call anyway, I believe, because even the current version isn't really something that people are happy with.
Yep, we'll do another last call. That's inevitable at this point, for the API specifically, for the algorithms and API spec, not for JSON-LD syntax. That could probably continue to the next stage. Nicholas?
Just an old thought I haven't entertained in quite a while. Regarding any other options. Some months ago, I think I had an idea about is it possible to imagine the API or some parts of the API to be synchronous by demanding that the data passed in has previously resolved any loading, any fetching of external entities, so that you have a two-pass approach where you, once you do the actual compaction or expansion pass in something where every external reference has been resolved and inlined as an inline context.
We could do that. I don't know if that's really the way that most people end up using these sorts of APIs. It kind of pushes a lot of cognitive load onto the developer if we choose to do that, because then they have to understand that things need to be resolved before they pass it into the API. I think we wanted to avoid an API that required that kind of mental work on the part of the developer.
You'd still have to call two things. One is load everything, and the other is the transformation. The nice thing about it was that I felt that it would be nice to have a pure transformation, which is synchronous, sort of mathematically pure. But that's just the quest. I think it's beside the point at this stage. I don't know if it would help.
That concerns me, because it would require quite a bit of work for this working group to even come up with what that looks like. I think we could probably get the work done in 2 months with all the other things that we're dealing with. But even that kind of puts us further behind, and there's no guarantee that that is going to actually end up being a better, or rather, I'm not convinced that that would be a better approach than the Futures API or the callback API.
But it wouldn't change anything, I believe, because the method would still have to be asynchronous. I mean, the outermost method. It's just that internally it would work differently.
I would imagine that what Nicholas is proposing would modify the method signatures slightly, or at least the descriptions, to say that you have to resolve things before you call this method.
If we're going to specify how to resolve things, then we're going to have to specify the asynchronous API for doing that anyway.
Yeah, that part would still have to be asynchronous, so I think it's beside the point, the main point of this problem.
Okay. If there are no other proposals, I'm going to propose to adopt the futures-based JSON-LD API. Any objections?
Greg's point is very important, that we make it abstracted away as much as possible.
Okay. Okay, so this is to resolve address issue 125/25 by adopting a futures-based API for the JSON-LD API. Let's see, adopting a futures-based approach for the JSON-LD API. Result. This is going to put us into another last call for the spec, just so we understand that. And then issue 124 is resolved as a result of this. Okay, so this also takes care of issue 124, because if we don't have the callback parameter, the options parameter can be optional, and the API is kind of simplified as a result of that. So that resolves both last call issues that we have currently. I will respond to both Boris and Tab, mentioning that these are the resolutions that we've made. Okay. Anything else on these two issues before we move on to Test Suite?
Yeah.
Or actually,
do we want to include an example or some more pros in the stack, or do we just leave it as it currently?
I think we should have a little bit of pros and an example in the spec. I think it would help people understand what's going on.
Here's another question. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that was it, really.
Yeah. My question is, since we are going to be going to last call, will both specs end up going back through last call, or can we at least proceed through and just put the algorithms and API and have it do the repeat?
I believe the second thing you said. So we can continue the JSON-LD syntax to Canada Direct, but that doesn't really mean anything because there is no real test suite for the syntax. Most of the tests that we run are on the algorithms. So the JSON-LD syntax will go to Canada Direct, and it could probably even go to Proposed Direct, and it will sit there until the JSON-LD API catches up. But when we go through another last call for the JSON-LD API, we can do a very short last call period, like 3 weeks. And while that is happening, we can do implementation reports and all that kind of stuff. So when it comes out of last call, we can probably skip past Canada Direct and go straight to Proposed Direct. Which all I'm basically outlining is that it shouldn't slow us down in the grand scheme of things. But we will probably want to be aggressive with the Canada Direct phase for the API and just say we should skip it and just go straight to the Proposed Direct phase.
Okay, I'm just trying to head off some management issues here of why are we basing our entire future on something that's a draft last call, whatever. So
right.
I've got my deck way out there.
Right. I don't think that there's nothing that has come up in this last call period that says that JSON-LD is not going to make it to an official recommendation. The only thing the only reason that we're discussing going to another last call is because there was a fairly substantive change to the API. But that has absolutely no impact on how your company uses it unless you're going to use it in a browser environment. And my understanding is that you guys are not.
Mostly. We're in some places we are, but mostly we're using, like I said, we're using it just as a RDF transport.
Yeah. So the algorithms have not changed at all during last call. The syntax has not changed at all during last call. So that stuff's solid. The API is the only thing that's changing, and we're changing it to make sure that the browser vendors will adopt it or that to increase the chances that they'll adopt it when the time comes.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Anything else on this issue before we move on to... Dave, did you want to talk about the term redefinition stuff a bit more?
Yeah, we need to go ahead and try and get that resolved. I don't have a link to that. I don't know if anyone else does. I can go find it.
I'm looking for the link right now.
I think it was a discussion on some comments, so you should find it there.
JSON-LD options? No, it wasn't. It wasn't that either.
Okay, I think I found it.
Should we open an issue for this, since it's taken up time on two calls now?
Yeah, we probably should have done that. Yeah, so to recap, what this issue is about is what the behavior is if you reuse, if in a new context you define a term that was previously existing, what the definition for that term should be. Should it reuse anything from the old context, or should it, when you go to define the new term, should it completely remove the old definition and use whatever is only in the new definition? And one consequence of only using what's in the new definition is that you might get into a circular definition if you set your term, if you define your term to yourself, that will fail. If we say that the definition is completely new, and it will succeed if we say that you can reuse the old definition.
So the last time we discussed this, I thought it seemed like Nicholas, myself, and Dave Longley agreed that whenever you start redefining a term, everything, the history of that term should be wiped out. There's no partial redefinition.
Yes. That is my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Marcus, your opinion was that that isn't quite accurate because it's not necessarily partial redefinition. I unfortunately can't summarize the argument that you made. So maybe could you do that, Marcus? Because it made it seem like you disagreed that was framing the problem incorrectly.
I think, well, it's the thing I argued for is that it's not a partial redefinition, because if you just use a term to expand something to an IRI, that's the same whether you redefine the term itself or whether you define another term. So if you delete a term, as soon as it's defined, you introduce some kind of asymmetry.
However, as Greg put into IRC, there's a case where it does not expand the same way.
I'm sorry?
If you look at that example, it's unclear which one you would mean. If we use one interpretation, term would come up with a value of A, and if you used another interpretation, it would be B term, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
So these types of issues, but we do need to resolve it.
Yeah, I think just the cognitive load in understanding the problem is reduced if you just say, as soon as you try to define a term on the left-hand side, anything you knew previously about it is gone, and so you just proceed that way. I think it's easier for people to understand it that way.
I agree.
I agree,
too. Yeah, probably you're right, especially looking at this example, yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like we have consensus. Any disagreements?
Just a quick question, because Dave already probably had to look at the algorithms in the spec. Do we need to change anything in the algorithms?
I don't think so, other than the couple of things we discussed that were related to this. Those are the only things we needed to change. There was some kind of bug, but we wrote that down in the commit. We just need to put that text in the algorithms.
Okay.
I'm putting in a proposal right now. So when redefining a term A, any previous definition or term, or when redefining a term A, any previous definition for term A is deleted, destroyed. Redefining a term A, any previous definition for term A is destroyed before the right-hand side, or the new redefinition is evaluated.
That sounds fine.
I just say removed instead of destroyed.
Less violent.
Deleted.
Tend to be removed before. Tend to be very, very violent programmer.
Marcus, just to recap, the only change that I think needed to happen to the algorithms was that you can get into a situation where you are redefining what was a term that looks like a query, and in that case, it's okay because you're using a prefix that was defined. And so, I think that was what you brought up originally, and I wrote some text in there that you can put in the spec that will reorder it correctly.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have a look after the telecom.
Okay, next up is test suite design. It sounded like we had a rough plan last week on the test suite design. Basically, we're keeping the test suite the same. We're expecting implementers to produce URL reports and submit them to us. For the API, we were going to have the developers just point us to the test harness that they use to test the API, and anyone else that wants to do an interoperable implementation of that would basically use that test harness. So, for example, in JavaScript, you could do a Mocha test framework, and then one person could just require their JSON LD JavaScript implementation, and then someone else could effectively remove that requirement and add a different requirement to pull in their JSON LD JavaScript implementation, and the test suite would just work regardless of which one was picked.
Or you could do dependency injection, and it would be a little simpler.
Yep. So it sounds like we have the approach, the general approach for the test harnesses down, both for the syntax, well, not the syntax test, but the main test suite tests, and then we have another approach for the API tests. Greg, do you think that's enough to generate the reports that we need?
If we have URL reports, one report per manifest, or rather, it could be a single report that includes the information from all manifests. Then that certainly is enough to produce the report. And, of course, the format of those could be anything. Conventionally, they're in Turtle, but they could be in JSON-LD, too, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One question I wondered was, currently in the test that manifest, there's just a hash URI identifying each single test. Shouldn't we expand that to an absolute IRI somewhere at, I don't know, W3C?
Well, isn't it expanded? It's expanded implicitly to the base of the manifest itself, which when we publish the test suite and call for implementations, that will be the driving manifest will be given an absolute location, and that resolves the relative IRIs of everything that's included in those other things. That's the way that in the URL report, for instance, in the Turtle manifests, all individual tests are identified with a hash IRI. So it's consistent with that.
Yeah, the only problem I see is that we probably have the test suite on GitHub, on W3C, on jsonld.org, and probably some people host it locally then, a local host or somewhere.
Perhaps by adding a base to the context used by the manifest or into an inline context using the W3C location, that will do it. I'll note that Turtle still hasn't quite finish that. They're, believe it or not, we've had months now that people have been submitting reports, but they've been doing it against the Mercurial location, and there is no actual W3C location yet, so people will need to redo it for that. So, but I think we're going to have some period of time where people are testing and doing these things. It should just simply be a matter of changing the base IRI that's used for reporting and getting those results later on. So it will need to be resolved, but it's probably not the most urgent thing.
And just to just be sure, how many of us are planning on submitting implementation reports?
I will do.
I will, but I still have quite a lot of work to do to update my my implementation.
I may, if I have lots of time.
what would you do it in, Nicholas? What would you implement it in, Nicholas? Python?
Yeah. Well, if I have even more time, I'll do one in CoffeeScript as well. Possibly. Yeah. That time needs more dimensions.
It does need more work.
Yeah. I would love to, though.
Has anything been done with the... I guess it wouldn't matter from some of the API stuff on the Java version?
No.
What I heard from Andy was he was waiting for the spec to settle before they proceeded with that. That would be the Jenna. I think that the Java version I think is associated with the Jenna project.
Okay.
So I expect them to do one too.
Okay. Well, that would be fantastic.
I think Java, having it in Java is really key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's possible that I will have to do something on that, either cooperate with the ones doing the current implementation or something like that, because we need it at the National Library at some point.
Oh, well, I'm sure that your participation in that would be really welcome.
Yeah, I hope I can scribble.
Okay. And then Dave Longley, I assume we are submitting a report.
Yeah, we'll have stuff for JavaScript, PHP, and Python.
All right, so that's way more implementations than we need, so that's good.
Do we need to extend the test suite for error cases or something?
Well, we did talk about this a little bit last week. We should have both positive and negative evaluation tests. Negative evaluation tests then would allow us to test for the error results. We do need to consider how we want to specify what the error is. With most RDF processors, the expectation is that it just raises an error, and not that it... not what the specifics of that error are. So if we want to test for specifics, that a specific error code is used, then we'll need to come up with some way of describing what that is. And probably overloading the results, but it should probably be done in something that can be treated as an IRI. And then I don't know that we have any need to do syntax level tests. But if we do have parameters or options, certainly at one level, options that drive the algorithms is one thing that needs to be tested. The API is something completely different. It might simply be that we want to do some mock type framework for API testing, so we're not retesting the algorithms twice. But I suppose that's just an implementation issue. Implementations might choose to implement that stuff with mock. But we might say something with that regard, is that, for instance, when calling this, the algorithm should be invoked with such and such an option.
Okay, I've got a hard stop at the top of the hour. Anything else on the test suite design? All right. right. So I think the next stage for us to kind of focus on is getting some reports done so that we aren't caught at the last second on having to generate those. So if implementers could focus on generating all reports so that we could possibly hand it off to Greg or someone else to coalesce those into an implementation report, that would be good. It would put us in a good position to get through CR quickly.
See, I've got, see if I can find an example of the URL report that we're using for Turtle. Because the format will be pretty much the same. Here is one that I'm using. So this is the URL report for my Turtle processor. So the form would be pretty much identical for JSON-LD, never mind the syntax, either inline or referenced dope and FOF information for the implementer and the implementation, and then an assertion for each test referencing the test subject, or the subject, the test, and the result.
Fairly straightforward. Right. Okay. So
it is. It's obviously important.
Files.
Yeah.
Correct, sorry.
It's obviously important that the tests IRIs match exactly.
Yep. Are we going to generate these reports in JSON-LD?
So the URL report infrastructure I use, it will take an open source project. Just it's a Ruby URL report is the name of the gem. it takes the test manifests and it takes the individual reports, processes them as RDF, and then runs Sparkle over it in order to extract the results, and then generates a JSON-LD file. So if you look at, let's see, this is actually a report generated, and you'll see a reference to there is for, this is an RDF A version. There's also references to Turtle and JSON-LD. If it happens the way that it works after running Sparkle, it outputs this JSON-LD, and then that is used in order to run the HTML output.
I guess Dave Longley's question was, can we generate the implementation report for each implementation? Can it produce JSON-LD instead of Turtle?
Yes, and it's anything. It's basically parsed as RDF, so
right.
Pretty much any RDF syntax can be used.
Yeah, I think
okay.
Greg is saying whatever.
Including JSON-LD.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it going to be a problem for you if developers give you Turtle, some of them in Turtle, some of them in JSON-LD?
No, I just point my Sparkle processor out of it, and it does essentially content and negotiation to figure out what parser to invoke to get extracted. So, no, it's not a problem.
Great. Do you want these posted on a website somewhere, or would it be better to send the file over email?
So the way that I've typically done this is I ask for people to send a report, which would be a reference to the URL, and then I download it and stick it in the repository. So we can certainly, I think that URL reports should be submitted through the mailing list, through RDF comments, but it's not necessary to put them in an external website. They can simply be added into the JSON-LD. They can be linked on JSON-LD.org in the reports directory. They just need to be named in such a way that we can identify the specific processor that they relate to.
Okay. All right. All sounds good. Any questions for Greg on submitting reports?
I'll probably send you one in a couple of days so that we can test if everything works.
Yeah, I'll run through it. There is a README in the report directory that tells how to run it if you are ambitious. Typically what I've done is I come in, I run it. If I see some problems, we'll send that back to the mailing list, and hopefully that serves as a learnable moment so that the future reports are address whatever issues we found.
Okay.
All right. That's it for the call this week. We'll also chat next week to cover any issues that come up, maybe talk a bit more about the Futures API, and then see how we're doing on implementation reports. Anything else before we go? All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week, and we'll chat next Tuesday.
Thank you.
Bye.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.